At the top of many minds is COVID relief for struggling New Mexico families and businesses. What can state legislators do to ease the pain? There are many other important issues facing lawmakers in this 60-day session, such as abortion rights, legalizing recreational cannabis, and New Mexico's energy future. We'll be joined by area representatives and Walt Rubel to discuss the session and provide analysis. Call 575-646-2212 with your questions and comments for Voice of the Public. We'll get started right after NPR News on KRWG Public Media. Thank you for joining us. It is 1:06. Good afternoon and welcome to Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. The 60-day legislative session got underway this week in Santa Fe. It's a very different session for a couple of different reasons, and we have invited area lawmakers to join us to talk about their priorities for this session. And those that have joined us so far on Zoom are District 38 Senator Carrie Hamblin, District 38 Representative Rebecca Dow, District 35 Representative Angelica Rubio, and District 35 Senator Crystal Diamond. Welcome, everyone, to KRWG's Voice of the Public. Carrie, I'll start with you, and I just want to get a sense from you of the different nature of this session and of your thoughts on how it is different, why it is different, and how you think the session will be affected as a result.
Well, Casey, thank you so much for having all of us on here, and it's great to see your face and see those studios that I once spent a lot of time in my years at KRWG. You know, several of us are back home right now as this session is, in some cases, a hybrid version. I believe in the House, they're completely remote, although with the option to be up at the Capitol. You know, it's, and I think all of us have kind of, you know, we've learned to roll with it. And I certainly don't want to speak for my colleagues here on the call, but you know, when we campaigned in a time of a pandemic, we learned that we had to really kind of be flexible and adapt whatever was thrown at us and try to, you know, figure out ways to still connect with people. And I think that's really kind of the running theme throughout this whole legislative session is how are we going to connect with people? I think that's the big thing, but also keep people safe. And so that's been the discussion almost every single day. Our first day of the legislature, we are required to be there in Santa Fe to do what's called sign the book. And we were able to do that and socially distance and have recess so that the chambers could be cleaned. And, you know, I felt really safe. I felt that it was a really good environment to be in. And it was great to finally see my colleagues face to face, not through a little tiny little screen that we're so used to seeing because of Zoom calls.
Mm-hmm. And my apologies to the gentleman joining us today to help provide analysis and perspective. Walt Rubel, thank you very much for being here.
Oh, you bet. Interesting discussion, I'm sure.
And Rebecca, I'd like to go ahead and move to you next to get your perspective on the differences of this year's session.
Yeah, I think it's a really high learning curve for a lot of us, and we're kind of getting the hang of it. We had our introductory meeting with Education Committee this morning, and it went pretty well. It went pretty smooth. And so I was really proud of our committee host, our staffer, who was, you know, watching who had their hands up and who was taking their hands down. And this time we didn't have public comment, but I'm interested to see how that's going to work. So whether we're on the House floor or whether we are working remotely from our home, which is where I am today, we will have to use Zoom to participate. And actually, as we speak, the Rules Committee is meeting to sort of finalize what that's going to look like. And I think we will be meeting for floor sessions, but it will still be hybrid in that case. So whether you are in person, the Senate is going to have floor hearings in person. Our floor hearings are, even if you're in person, you will use a electronic device. And so the activity will happen through the webcast no matter where you are. So just trying to figure it out. And we had a lot of questions today. How do people get public comment? How do we view a handout? How long will we have to review an amendment? Because we're abbreviating some of the processes that I believe are important for, you know, proper vetting. But so we're just asking questions and figuring it out.
Angelica, I notice you have your bicycle in the background there, and that was something that was different for you this year as well as you went into this session.
Yeah, thank you. It was really different because I didn't actually get to ride my bike this year up to Santa Fe, which really bummed me out because I feel like not only is it a lot of fun to connect with communities along the way and do town halls. I know the first year I did it with Representative Dow in TRC, and I think this year just psychologically, I always used my bike ride as a way to prepare for the session, and to not be able to do that was quite the bummer. But I mean, I was there on Tuesday. I have a lot of respect for the staff and for the folks who really took the time to do all the work to prepare for not only the issue related to COVID, but also security, because there was just so much news going on and alerts around the potential issues that might arise in state capitals. And so I'm super grateful for the staff and for leadership and folks who did all they needed to do to make sure that we were all safe. Not just the legislators, but the staff themselves, especially the staff, because they're amazing. And they're just, they really are what make the Capitol really function and operate.
Crystal, as a newly elected senator, what was it like, you know, having this be your first experience?
So you're right. I'm brand new to.
And just like that,
so
we had our.
It's bittersweet because on opening.
Sorry, Crystal, we just had that first little freeze along the way. So not unanticipated for 2021 and doing everything
welcome,
by Zoom. But
welcome
let's
to rural New Mexico. I think we all agree broadband should remain a priority. So there we go. I was saying that opening day was bittersweet. As excited as we are all in the Senate to get to work, because of the closed Capitol, we weren't really able to share that moment with our family. I have two very young, impressionable daughters, and it's exciting that this year sees more female legislators than they've ever seen before. I would have loved to share that opportunity with my young daughters and a bunch of young women to come in and see the possibilities of really what an accomplishment and a celebration that was for women. I feel like the public was left out of that. Overall, I do have some concerns about a closed Capitol. My concern is that leaving the people out of the people's house and restricting access to their legislator, it's a real learning curve for those of us who are brand new. I need access to my constituents. I need access to lobbyists, the value of lobbyists, and to advocates. And my concern is that really, as a freshman legislator, I'm at a disadvantage. I want to be a legislator who makes very well-informed decision and takes votes where I feel like I was able to understand every perspective of that bill. So I do have concerns. Just that the advocates, and I know exactly how this legislation is going to impact everyone in New Mexico before I make decisions. And so it's concerning. The limited access is concerning, and I hope that we work through that throughout the session.
Certainly some daunting tasks ahead of all of you. And Walt, I'd like to bring you into the fold at this point to just offer kind of your perspective on how the differences of this legislative session might impact it as a whole.
Well, the first thing I think about is just what Senator Diamond talked about, and that is the ability of people to impact the process. In one way, it may be a little bit easier in that you don't have to drive to Santa Fe. That, you know, certainly there were people who would devote an entire day to going up there and then just hoping that their bill didn't get passed over in committee so that they took a day off for nothing. But on the other hand, there is an impact of having a packed committee room and having people passionately advocate for or against a bill that I just don't think you can replicate that on Zoom. So I think that's going to be tough. I think that will make it more difficult for the public to have a meaningful impact in the moment. The way they can make up for that is by calling their legislators ahead of time and talking to them ahead of time. But there in the moment, it's going to be more difficult to impact bills, I think. And I worry about that, too.
And Carrie, you had your hand up there.
Yeah, well, I think what Walt brings to the question, and also Senator Diamond brought, is that, you know, because of the access issue of not having statewide broadband, what we are in a position of having to try and navigate is to give people, is to recognize that there's a digital divide and that there are communities that don't have access to technology, don't have access to internet, and yet still should be part of that process. And so I think we're dealing with a couple of different prongs here. Is first and foremost is that right now, in order to keep our communities safe, we're trying to socially distance as much as possible and provide the opportunities for people to talk and communicate. On the other hand, from our side as legislators, is like, you know, what different methods can we use to communicate with our constituents without putting anybody in danger? And so it's making sure that our phone number is public, making sure that we're checking our email, making sure that our secretaries are passing along information to us, and also, you know, holding Zoom meetings for those that can, and also letters. I think it's putting the challenge on us as legislators to try and find those different ways of still being able to communicate with our constituents when we're in a time of a pandemic and limited ability to get face to face with people. But it still puts that we're behind in broadband. I mean, ultimately, that's the problem, is that we do not have statewide broadband. We need to make that a priority. And we need to be able to have people and communities, rural communities, especially tribal communities, have access to the mode that we are using right now to communicate.
And Representative Dow, you had something to add?
Well, I just want to caution us using the term broadband. Technology becomes obsolete very quickly, and there are rapid, you know, new modern technologies that replace broadband. And so I know there's a lot of bills around broadband. That's what everyone's talking about. But, you know, we're all close to Spaceport America, where there are multiple companies that are launching satellites. They're launching all different types. There's like 300-foot drones that are suborbital, projecting access to the internet, and it's not broadband. We don't have to disrupt the ground. We don't have to bury cables, you know, and we don't have to get access and why am I going blank on the term? We don't have to get right-of-ways throughout different properties and different jurisdictions. And so we talk a lot about broadband, but we need to be talking about access. And so with technology improving and new things arising, it doesn't just have to be broadband.
You certainly were nodding your head in agreement there. Senator Diamond, did you have something to add along those lines on that subject?
You know what? I actually had the opportunity to also visit Spaceport America when I asked what that drone is, Rebecca, I think is what you're referring to. It's amazing. They said that by flying two drones above New Mexico, every single household in this entire state would have internet access. And so one of them sitting out here. And so I would agree with you on that, Dow, is I don't care how they get internet access. I just want everyone to have access. Whatever we have to do to make sure that we're bringing the resources specifically to rural New Mexico. It's estimated that 25% of New Mexicans don't have internet, you know, and it's not just for this legislative session, but let's talk about schools being out. That's 25% of our homes in New Mexico don't have internet access. And a lot of those areas don't have the resources. They don't have community centers, libraries, whatever it needs to make sure that our children are getting the resources they need. Our businesses are suffering out there. So whatever it takes to, you're right, to increase access, I would be supportive of.
And Representative Rubio, and I think we're going to launch into the subject, and I saw your hand up, Carrie, so give me just a moment. We're going to launch into the subject of education as a whole, and obviously this is a big part of that conversation, but I wanted to just give Representative Rubio a chance to weigh in on that access question.
Yeah, thank you for that. So I've been working since March with about, I want to say, seven other legislators in the House, hoping to introduce the legislation this coming week on what connectivity looks like for New Mexico when it comes to issues around access to the internet. But not only just making it as expansive as possible, but also thinking about how do we make it so that people who have access to it actually know how to use it. And so part of the biggest piece of this legislation, which we call the Connect New Mexico Act, is to really think about it in terms of not just expanding broadband and other opportunities for folks to be completely connected, but really to think about it in ways that are as equitable as possible so that folks in rural New Mexico, Native and Indigenous communities, have the same kind of accesses as people living in Albuquerque or Las Cruces or Santa Fe.
And Carrie?
Yeah, you know, and I think when we use the term broadband, it's just because that's the common use. I agree with Representative Dow and Senator Diamond and Representative Rubio. It's like, however we can get people connected, if it's using drones, if it's using satellite. You know, the thing that's concerning is that, like, down in Chamberino, there's a cell phone tower that's not powered up, so the community of Chamberino doesn't have access to internet. And the thing that's a big flag for me is when it's a public-private partnership where the private companies don't set up internet or access to internet because they're not going to make money off of it. Well, in the rural and tribal communities, you're not going to make money off of it. But, it, you know, really, I think all of us can agree that it's an essential service, and it should be labeled as an essential service, just like water, just like electricity, just like access to roads. And I think that's where all of us are really kind of we might have different entry points to the same point, is that our communities are not having the access that they deserve. And however we can get that to them, we need to make that a priority in this session.
All right. It's 121, and 575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call. If you have a question for any of the representatives that are joining us here today, or a comment on the 60-day legislative session that got underway this week in Santa Fe, call now. 575-646-2212 for Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. And thank you for joining us this afternoon. Let's begin with Representative Dow and talk about just what are some of your biggest legislative priorities for this session.
Well, I always introduce a lot of bills. I jokingly say that I'm trying to catch up with Senator Padilla, who must introduce a record number of bills. So narrowing it down to five has been really hard. So I'm going to advocate for a lot of people's bills that I'm not the primary on. And I think the first and most important thing is that we have to get our schools open. We have 42 states in the United States that have figured out how to have in-person learning. And I think there's enough examples out there where students are not only in school learning, they're in sports, they're in their co-curricular activities. And I am hearing from parents, I'm hearing from teachers, I'm hearing from superintendents that, and students, that they are experiencing fatigue, mental fatigue, emotional fatigue, I mean, academic duress, and we've got to get them back in school. So I will be signing on to the bill to open our schools and to give more local autonomy to those decision making. You know, of course, following safety guidelines, but there's, you know, there's eight states that haven't figured out how to do it, and there's 42 that would give us examples. And I think that's one of the things about individual state rights, is that we have a lot of examples we can look at, and there's a minimal difference in their COVID cases and deaths. So it's time to open our schools. I have a bill that I'll be introducing again, and it has a lot of bipartisan support. It's called the Parity Pay Act. And basically, as the state is imposing a minimum wage increase or imposing more employer benefit requirements, we are not increasing the contracts the state has with third parties to provide services on our behalf. So for example, our homeless shelters did not see a rate increase, even though minimum wage is now up $3. And now we're looking at paid maternity leave, paid sick leave, an increased cost to unemployment funds. And our contractors just cannot keep up with the cost of living. They can, especially in rural New Mexico, they cannot keep up with even liability insurance costs. So take a personal care provider, a home health hospice program, a nursing home, and these are people doing peri care for our elderly and disabled people. We gave them new costs, but we did not increase their compensation for providing these services on behalf of the state for vulnerable populations. So I will continue to advocate for that, because these unfunded mandates are resulting in closures of these critical services for our vulnerable populations. That's child care, senior meal sites, homeless shelters, home care, hospice care, CNAs, anyone that's working for less than $15 an hour. If we're going to raise the expectations and their cost of doing business, we've got to increase our contracts with them for delivering the services, or we're jeopardizing quality of care and sustainability of programs. So that's a big one. I don't know. I don't want to monopolize everyone's time, but I'm working hard on the exemption of tax on Social Security income, and have an in-state meat inspection. Those are two things that I believe will promote economic development. open and transparent government. I don't want to vote for bills that limit liberty. So those are my focus.
Okay, thank you very much. And we do have some callers. So before we move on to, we'll go to you, Representative Rubio, next for your list of priorities. But let's get to Dan, who is holding with a question. Thank you for calling Voice of the Public. Dan, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for including me. I want to address the issue of universal broadband that's been brought up in connection with virtual learning. And we have to think that this COVID thing is probably the tip of the iceberg. In other words, you know, as populations get closer together, we move into, you know, areas where animals predominated before, we are going to pick up more of these mutants, mutant diseases. And virtual learning, we have learned, has some advantages and some disadvantages. The problem is, how do you hook up everybody? Well, I was on a committee some years ago with the city and exploring the question of municipal broadband. And we have a lot of assets, and the state has. For instance, we have what is called fugitive fiber all over the place. Various companies have put in fiber optics and then dropped out or changed or got bought out by somebody else. And we have all this fiber all over the place in the state, in the city. And it wouldn't have been that difficult to implement a municipal system, for example, except that the people who own the links from any local system, and that would include all any other place in the state, to the Internet are owned by people like CenturyLink and Cox Cable and Comcast, people like that. They, if you don't have that link to the actual Internet, your local broadband is useless. And they refuse to talk to us. And I think you will run into the same problem again unless there is some way of putting pressure on the owners of the links to the actual Internet. And it, the important thing is this. If you are setting up virtual learning in, let's say, Las Cruces schools, you use programs that are on servers that are all over the world. They could be in Minnesota, they could be in Oregon, or wherever. And, of course, the course content you generate locally, and the recipient is local. But you have to have the links to the Internet, the satellites, repeaters at the satellites themselves, and so forth. So what I'm suggesting is that you look at the other end of the telescope first. In other words, what needs to be done to get the owners of the links to the Internet involved? If you don't get those people involved, forget it. It will never happen.
Well, Dan, I want to tell you that you were getting a lot of nodding from our legislators who have joined us here today while you were making those comments. Thank you very much for your call.
Okay, very good. Thank you for the opportunity.
Anytime. And Keith is holding as well, so let's get to Keith's question. Good afternoon, Keith. Thank you for calling Voice of the Public.
Once again, thank you for taking the time to address my issues. They're twofold, basically. First, I'm pretty ignorant on how the businesses are structured that the gentleman that just called referred to as Cox Cable and the different providers. If I was a person of nominal intelligence, and I would look at those businesses and I would say, are they paying for themselves or are they being subsidized? It's very easy to me to sit there on somebody else's dime and not really be motivated to do anything to provide a service until you're provided with extra funds or payment or money, however you want to word it, versus if they had to pay for their own keep, so to speak, they might be a little more, you know, in a positive nature to provide the services that the gentleman referred to. So that being said, the second part of my question statement is that I'm a disabled Vietnam-era veteran. I have been in an appeal process with a notice of disagreement with the VA in Albuquerque for 3.5 years on what they say is a projected 7-year wait. Is there anybody there that has a connection to the Veterans Administration or deals with them on any type of regularity that could help me possibly?
Anybody who can address that question? Yes, Representative Dow says she has some information.
Well, I can point you in the right direction. Are you able to send me an email?
Of course.
Okay. My email address is Rebecca@DowFOR4House.com, Rebecca@DowForHouse.com, and I will connect you with a veteran service officer, and if that does not work, with our state secretary.
All right. Could I give you my email in turn just to make sure that you could send me one and that I have the exact information that you gave me?
Sure.
So my email is Keith Dowser, D-O-W-S-E-R, 71@gmail.com.
I'm going to prank email you, Keith. I'm going to send you an email that says, is your refrigerator running?
and my commitment is to stick with you until we get you to the right place. Thank you for calling.
Ma'am. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. And can anyone address that first portion of Keith's question regarding the companies and what maybe subsidies they might be getting and how maybe there could be a little bit of arm twisting along those lines to get them on board? Not so much. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, what I was just going to, and this is Representative Rubio, I was just going to address the issue that the gentleman brought up about that is, I think we're having to really focus on some of these issues in a lot of our legislation is that sometimes subsidizing companies isn't always the best thing that we can be doing, especially when it comes issues to connectivity. And so my hope is that over the course of the next 60 days, that this is a conversation that we can be having in terms of how much state investment, how much is the state willing to invest in something. And I think that Senator Hamlin touched upon it real briefly, but I think is very, very important is that connectivity, whether it's broadband or anything else, it is a human right in the same way that housing and shelter and access to clean water and clean air. Connectivity is one of those things, and it shouldn't be something that we continue to perpetuate through providing incentives and subsidizing for profit, because this should be an investment that our legislature and our governor should prioritize.
All right. One more caller waiting to ask a question, and then we'll move on to more legislative priorities. Shannon, welcome to Voice of the Public. Thank you for calling.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm calling from Sierra County, and I also have questions about potential broadband, more universal broadband service. My first question is, which form in Sierra County particularly is most likely this to come about in, whether you're talking about satellites or I had previous experience in Far West Texas with 150 miles of fiber optic cable being laid underground by people that were connected to my late husband. So I wasn't aware that satellite was an option. I'm curious which form would likely to serve Sierra County. Secondly, how long do y'all consider this would take? This has been really a problem for a very long time. And thirdly, about the cost, if it were regarded as a utility, for example, and elderly people like myself living on a fixed income, what is the affordability also at issue here at a part of anybody's considerations in terms of legislation? One of the reasons I'm asking these questions, I really felt marginalized at various times so far during the pandemic. And so I'm thinking about getting a device so that I can get online now. But the cost really is somewhat prohibitive. And I was wondering if I would be able to even wait long enough to wait this out for the broadband service to become a reality.
Carrie, you were raising your hand while Shannon was asking her question.
I do want to make sure that Senator Diamond didn't want to answer and want to chime in there first, since Sierra County or Representative Dow.
We
want to make sure
we can tag team on that, Senator Hamlin. Yeah. I just wanted to mention that most likely broadband. We were kind of excited about this drone that's headed up. I don't know just if that's in the near future. It's near enough. It's near enough before we make big investments. But I will tell you that we're very lucky right now. We have a great partnership between our local electric co-op and Sacred Winds has actually come into Sierra County. And so we have some big projects going on. We have some good rural broadband projects taking place right now in certain areas of the county. I'm not exactly sure where you are located in Sierra County, but Sierra County is making some good steps in the right direction. I also just want to echo what you said. We are behind, and I think we all agree this should have been done a long time ago. I want to really send some kudos out to Senator Padilla. For as long as I've known him, has been trying to get something done. But I think that COVID just highlighted the need for this so bad that I think we're all committed to making sure that it happens in one form or another. Go ahead, Senator Hammond.
Thanks, Senator Diamond. I appreciate that. It's also the, when we talk about accessibility and affordability, one of the things that we're missing out, and this was according to Secretary Salazar at the State Department of IT, is that we're missing out on $800 million in federal grants from USDA and FCC. And so we have to agree as a state to make that commitment in order to qualify for those grants, in order for us to start that process. And I think, as I was talking with my colleague in the Senate, Senator Pinto, for the Navajo Reservation, satellites are much more appropriate, or drones. And so I think and the Department of IT has really looked at all of these different areas. So fiber optics may be good in one area, but it's not going to be good in another area. And to make sure that we have the flexibility to apply what is needed and appropriate for each of these areas to make accessibility the most affordable and practical for people who are living in those communities. And so the conversations are there and they've been had. And yes, all of us agree it's long overdue. And it's kind of like it took a pandemic for all of us to really bump that up as a priority. But I do know that those discussions are being taken, that are taking place. And I think all of us now recognize that, we need to really move forward on that. And so I'm Representative Dow.
I just wanted to add to make sure that that you know that when a bill is passed in New Mexico, if we pass a bill in the 60-day session to fund something, unless it has an emergency clause, that money will not be available until July. And even right now, some funds that Sierra County received are still waiting for approval from the Department of Finance Authority. So the funding was appropriated in the last session, available in July, but has still not reached our county. So if you're looking for a real live decision to make about that affects your personal income right now, it could realistically, if all the bills pass and things go smooth and there's no delays, you're looking probably at least a year or more. So I don't want to give you a false sense that it's like right around the corner. And in addition to that, I just wanted to say that a lot of these funds that we're talking about that are coming into our county through Sacred Winds is because of the really hard work of our county manager, Bruce Swindle, who applied for the initiative that Trump had for rebuild rural. So that was money for roads, money for broadband, money for water infrastructure. And so a lot of those dollars are flowing to Sierra County because of our designation as an opportunity zone and because of the hard work of our county manager. So it's also different county by county based on the leadership and their capacity to apply for these grants and to work with our state and federal partners.
I feel like we could have done a whole show. We could do a whole show just on this one topic alone. And we've certainly spent a lot of time on it. I want to welcome to the party Representative Joanne Ferrari, who has just joined. Thank you for coming in. We've been discussing broadband and access to the internet. Maybe not use the word broadband so much. That might be a thing of the past. But we're going to move on now and just get a perspective of everyone's legislative priorities who have yet to chime in on that. And we left off with Representative Rubio. Why don't you give us the picture of what your most important priorities are?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will reiterate what Representative Dow mentioned earlier, is that being limited to five bills has been challenging, but I'm actually really glad for it because I think it really has allowed for many of us to be laser focused on what we want to accomplish over the next 60 days. In the issue around broadband, I just did want to mention that one of the things that both the House legislation and what I believe Senator Padilla is proposing is a much more centralized a department or individual to actually coordinate with all state agencies to really make sure that that the issue around connectivity is done in a much more robust and comprehensive way. That hasn't existed. And so when Senator Hamlin was talking around about the hundreds of thousands of dollars for federal grants, we can now have hopefully a much more centralized process to do that. In terms of the legislation that I'm carrying, I think it is really one, it's related to addressing economic diversification, but really how do we prepare for not only just a green economy, but a new economy here in New Mexico, one that isn't just heavily reliant on extractive industries, but that it is also much more that we can bring in more industry, but not leaving workers behind. I think that's been the biggest conversation that we have had since I've been in the legislature, is that we keep talking about economic diversification, but yet we don't really push through a lot of policies to really make it work. And so, but at the same time, workers are being left out of those conversations in terms of job training and development. And so my hope is that this coming week we'll be able to, we're finalizing a piece of legislation that not only addresses issues related to climate, but also economic diversification and really training and developing our workforce here in New Mexico. Housing has been a really big deal for me over the course of this year, especially in the midst of a pandemic. We have been asking people to stay home, except that so many people are actually losing their housing because they don't have income or supports to be able to stay in their home. And we've been trying really hard to prevent evictions and all of that. And so, and foreclosures. And so myself, Representative Andrea Romero, and others are working on a housing modernization legislation that's already been introduced. It's House Bill 111. And it really just fixes some of the things that tenants and landlords have had to deal with a lot of archaic policies that exist. So we are hoping that we can solidify and make our housing issue much much more expansive for opportunities for folks. I am sponsoring legislation around a paid sick leave that would provide for paid sick leave for workers across the state, especially as we've said, this COVID-19 has really unveiled a lot of inequities here in the state. And a lot of it has come to the issues related to essential workers. And so paid sick leave, I believe, helps to address a lot of that. As I mentioned, I'm a co-sponsor on the broadband bill that we will be introducing in the House. I'm working on issues related to providing healthy food financing, building a mechanism around that. I'm actually sponsoring that with Senator Hamlin, who's been working on a working group, and it's something that I think Rebecca, I forget what it was, politely tabled the bill a couple of years ago because it just wasn't ready. But we're hoping that it'll be ready and that we can get some bipartisan support on that. And finally, there's been a lot of issues related to price gouging, especially here in New Mexico, where 40% of our New Mexicans have had to choose to not take medication because it's just so expensive. I've been working with some folks who on creating a prescription drug affordability board. We're hoping to get that legislation finalized in the next day or two. And I would really ask for the support of legislators that are on this panel and folks who are listening, because I think it's a really big deal for many folks living across the state of New Mexico.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Rubio. Let's move over to Senator Diamond next for your legislative priorities.
In a normal year, I guess I would say that jobs needs to be job number one, and we would focus on economic development. But the reality is, because of COVID, I think we all agree that economic recovery is kind of what we're looking at now. And it's hard for me to start thinking about recovery because we still have an open wound before we can recover from. And so we've got to stop the bleed by opening New Mexico. I mean, we continue every single day to just to fall and into economic despair daily. So I really want to champion a very safe reopen in New Mexico. I think one of my favorite quotes was just last week from New York's Governor Cuomo, who said, if we don't open New York soon, there's nothing to open. Well, I think we can understand that in New Mexico. I fear that if we take any longer in opening New Mexico, there aren't going to be many businesses left to open. That includes our schools. I think we need to be reminded that every business is an essential business, and how do we get people back to work? That is my priority. I ran in my campaign, and it's the area that I know well, is to provide a voice for rural New Mexico. I think that there's a lot of legislation that goes through in Santa Fe, and a lot of our urban lawmakers, while it may work in their districts and be good legislation, it doesn't work in rural New Mexico. And so if I could get away from the cookie cutter legislation that doesn't necessarily work back out here in rural and remote parts of New Mexico, I can assure you that what's working in Albuquerque does not necessarily work in Animas. And so if we can collectively team up, not by party, because I once again, I say the divide in Santa Fe is not R versus D. The divide in Santa Fe is a perspective. It is urban versus rural. And so for those of us who have areas of rural New Mexico who can come from a little bit different perspective and add that flexibility in, I hope to build allegiances and alliances with those lawmakers and just coming and passing good policy that is, for the first time, good for all New Mexicans and not just our city dwellers. So on that note, I was actually excited. One of our newer freshman senators also is Senator Hemphill out of Grant County came to me and said, what about this idea for a rural ombudsman bill? You know, where we actually set someone aside who make sure that the legislation that rural New Mexico has a voice. And I'm like, all about it. So we're working on the details of that. And I have some other bills that are very specific to my district that for so long have been ignored that I'd like to champion. So I'm excited. I will tell you that even with all the challenges, I'm in the minority of the Senate. We have a closed Capitol, that I'm still very optimistic that we're going to get some good work done. I really am.
All right. Thank you very much, Senator Diamond and Senator Hamblin. Let's move over to your priorities for this session.
Well, you know, I'd like to echo Senator Diamond. We have the good fortune of sitting right next to each other in the front row in the Senate chambers. And I think that's really appropriate because we've already had conversations about how we as legislators can pool together our capital outlay to help our rural communities. And I'm really grateful for that because in Senate District 38, there are many, many rural communities as well that need services and need the attention that that they've been ignored in the past. And so, you know, I'm grateful for that and to be able to work, you know, with that. I do agree with Senator Diamond. It's not R's and D's. It's like, you know, urban and rural. And let's make sure we can do our part and be that voice and bring that voice to the table that's long been ignored. You know, some of the legislation that I'm working on, I, as Representative Rubio talked about, is the Healthy Food Financing Act in the Senate to really support rural communities, especially communities of color, to be able to have access to healthy food so that we don't have food deserts. You know, many of our discount stores in rural parts need to be able to sell healthy food and not any kind of, you know, non-nutritious food for those communities. So it's great to be able to be the Senate sponsor for that. Working with Senator Correa Hemphill on a PT compact, so a physical therapist compact, so that rural communities can have access to physical therapists from other bordering states. And it's a compact that is also, there's a nursing compact. 30 states in the country already follow this compact, and it's so that you don't have to have a license in New Mexico, but you still follow the same guidelines that everybody else does. And so those rural communities can have access to those special resources in terms of physical therapy and specialized health care. I'm also sponsoring a bill to get LGBTQ, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer individuals, get that information as data collection on state forms. You know, we have a number of different things and on state forms that require data. And want to make sure that the LGBTQ community also gets included in that data collection. And so I'm supporting that. Also a memorial to have kind of some uniformity and regulation in nursing homes, because we've noticed with the pandemic that is one of the most vulnerable populations regarding COVID. And we want to make sure that those nursing homes have the support and resources available. So a nursing home task force memorial is also going to be filed, actually, I think, today. So those are some of the things. And you know, like all of us, job creation, diversifying our revenue streams, as we've seen with COVID, just the impact it's had on oil and gas, and also creating new jobs. We do have this economic recovery, and I think that along with it, we can start looking at other opportunities for us to build our job base so that people don't go outside of the state, that we don't lose people outside of the state to jobs because we don't provide them here. Especially for many of our families, that family is very, very important. And it just breaks my heart when kids have to go somewhere else because they can't find their jobs here. And that really kind of separates the families. So certainly looking at that as well.
All right. Thank you very much, Senator Hamlin. And Representative Ferrari, welcome to Voice of the Public. I know you were spending the first few minutes, it looked like, trying to find a spot where you had good connection to the Internet, which we spent the whole first half of the show talking about. How are you doing?
Yes, I'm doing just fine, thank you. And it was so good to hear about all the other legislation that my colleagues are supporting. It's really going to be an exciting time for New Mexico. And as we try and get through these great opportunities and things to support our state.
What would be your personal legislative priorities for this session?
Well, one of the first things, today happens to be the 48th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. And so we again are going to introduce in the Senate and the House a bill that will assure that women have access to full health care needs, and that includes abortion. And so we are very hopeful for that bill to go through. And the food, I've also been working since last year as Representative Dow has also on food hunger work group. And so we plan to introduce an omnibus bill. We'll include a lot of different ideas. I have one, we'll give extra funding to the food banks because of COVID. In our special session, we did get some CARES Act money, another $5 million, but we need another $5 million to carry us through because we do have, this has been extended for so long and unexpectedly that we are trying to get more funding to the Food Bank Association that can help all the food pantries and their distribution system throughout the state. And also, I'm glad to support Representative Dow and Armstrong have introduced a bill for the farm to senior and schools bill that will help get homegrown, our own farmers' products, produce into the school system and to senior centers too. And also, one of the problems we have in, and many constituents have come to me in the past 2 years about guardianship. And when people, the courts have someone come in and take over someone's financial, their medical, all of those decisions, we have had some, problems with that. So, getting a supported decision-making step that's just before someone goes into full guardianship is something that we need to set up a task force for. And that task force can look at getting that extra level in to our system and how that's going to work with the courts. But then also more importantly, the guardianship program that is run by the courts isn't, there isn't a mechanism to certify the providers. So we're going to add a certification at the state level for anyone who is involved in this program. So that way we can assure that there's some type of monitoring. And then also along in the educational format for certification, I'm introducing a bill that will, any board certified, we already have it where the teachers can get extra compensation for being board certified, but we don't have that for counselors and some of the other positions within the school. So we hope to get that bill through also. There are so many things, also raising the minimum wage. We were able to get that in 2019, and it's been incrementally increasing, but we think that it's time, and there's enough conversation about how we need to be at $15 an hour as a minimum wage. And this bill that Representative Patricia Roybal-Caballero has been trying to get through for many different sessions, I think now's the time that that might just happen. And one of the good things that that also includes is that the removal of exclusions like farm workers not to get a minimum wage, and for young people who are working, for them to be able to get, if they're going to take time to work and help support their families, they need to be making also the same minimum wage as other people. And then also, because of my work with Disabilities Concerns, we have found that there is a program that is federally implemented that allows people with disabilities to be paid less than even the minimum wage that we have now. It's called a sub-minimum wage. So we are, we had a task force that met a couple years ago, maybe it's just been a year, but it started 2 years ago, and they found that we have about 250 people who are measured by how much they're paid by how fast they can work. So sometimes people can only do things so fast if they have a developmental disability, and only get like less than $2 an hour. So the bill that will raise the minimum wage will also include taking away the sub-minimum wage for state.
Okay, thank you, Representative Ferrari. I know, Rebecca Dow, you have to scoot out and head to a committee meeting. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. And if anybody wants to get a hold of me, you can email me at rebecca@dowforhouse.com. Message me on Facebook, Representative Rebecca Dow. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you all. I mean, it's 1:57. Walt, I've got to bring you back into the fold here to ask, you know, at the end of it all, what are your predictions for which of these pieces of legislation will be successful?
Yeah, I wrote a column this week saying that I think this has the potential to be the most productive session ever. Part of that is because of the pandemic and the fact that they have to cut out all of the ceremonial stuff. And I don't want to be too critical of that, given what Senator Diamond said earlier about her disappointment that they can't have the kids up there. But that stuff used to drive me crazy my first years covering the session. When you have a 30-day or a 60-day session and you're such a limited time period, and so many bills die at the end of the session without ever getting a vote, without ever getting a hearing, and they spend so much time on the ceremonial stuff that it used to just drive me crazy, and then I just came to accept it, and it's just kind of part of the culture, and it is important that they keep those connections with the hometown folks. But because of that, and also because of the changes in the Senate, where you Carrie Hamlin, or Senator Hamlin being an obvious example of that, you have these younger senators coming in, replacing more conservative, more establishment Democrats. And there are a lot of bills that have been passed year after year after year in the House. Probably the most obvious one is the early childhood education, not a bill, but a joint resolution, where they would take more money from the permanent fund. That's been passed, I think, 5 years in a row in the House. It continually dies in Senate finance. So I think there are going to be a lot of bills like that, that House already has heard them, they've already cleared them, and I think there'll be a lot better chance this year in the Senate.
All right. Thank you for joining us today, Walt.
You bet.
And Senator Hamblin, thank you for being here.
It's always a pleasure, Casey. Thank you so much.
Representative Rubio, thank you for sharing some time with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for the invitation.
And Senator Diamond, welcome aboard. Glad to have you. Hope you'll come back again soon.
I hope so, too. It'd be nice if we all were able to reconnect in person and do a legislative recap. With any luck, we can reunite in 60 days.
Indeed. And Representative Ferrari, thank you for joining when you did. We were glad to have you.
Oh, thank you so much.
I must say it did upset the balance. We had the perfect balance to Republicans to Democrats. but at the end of the show, it looked a little bit more like our legislature. So thank you to all of you. The hour certainly flew by. It is 2 o'clock. Leora Zeitlin is coming up next with Intermezzo by Request. NPR News is on the way as well. And I did save a little time this time around to give my deepest thanks to engineer Jake Lockwood and Anthony Porras for helping us manage this Zoom session on the radio today and for making sure that it always comes off without a hitch. It's Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. Thank you for listening today. And if you're just tuning in and missed the show and would like to hear what the representatives and senators had to say today, you can always find it at krwg.org. Click on local radio and Voice of the Public.